So I'd like to thank Andre and Tony and Nat for giving me the opportunity to tell you about our work on looking at intramolecular dynamics probed by the coherent electrons emitted during the high harmonic generation process. And Nick Wagner and Andrea Wust were the student and postdoc who were responsible for much of the work. And the more recent work was done by Robin Hooper and Zhibin Zhao. And we're very fortunate to have Zach Walters and Stefano Tanzani, Ivan Kristov, and Chris Green working with us on developing new theoretical models to try to understand, as Ken was saying, what we did. And, of course, all of the work was done in collaboration with my better half, Henry Kaptain. So what I'd like to talk about today is looking at excited molecules probed by monitoring the X-rays that are generated during the high harmonic generation process. And we've been able to implement that in two different types of molecules now. One, that's a simple spherically symmetric molecule, SF6, and more recently, a more interesting non-spherically symmetric molecule. This is actually a freon gas. And the preliminary theoretical models that Yvonne and Chris have developed are in broad agreement with our results. And then if I have time, I'd like to talk about the observation of laser-assisted photoemission from surfaces. Ferenc talked about it also. And for a bit of fun, I want to disagree with Ferenc. Liven things up a bit. In fact, it turns out that I do believe it's actually very hard not to see laser-assisted photoemission from surfaces. And in fact, it's been reported in two different publications already and incorrectly ascribed to hot electrons. And there's many interesting anomalously fast hot electron dynamics. And there's many interesting theoretical challenges in this area because of the electron screening effects and such. So we've known for a long time how to align molecules in a laser field. If you hit a molecule with a strong pulse because of the different polarizability along the molecular axis and perpendicular to the molecular axis, the molecule will align. And then in some beautiful work that we're going to hear about in the next talk by John, John showed that it matters from the point of view of how bright an X-ray signal one generates, it matters how the molecule is aligned. When the molecule is aligned perpendicular to the field, you get a brighter X-ray burst than when it's end-on. And this is just the different recollision cross-section. And we'll also hear about beautiful work in Paul's group on using that as a potential tomographic probe of molecules. And in our group, we wanted to try to look at internal dynamics within a molecule, and the simplest thing to start with is a vibrationally excited molecule. And so in this first step, we wanted to find out what modes are we sensitive to. We didn't want the very large signal due to the rotations, because the rotation is a huge difference in signal, whether the molecule is perpendicular or end-on to the field. And because there's such a large difference in signal, we wanted to avoid the signal from rotationally aligned molecules, because that would swamp any signal that we might see from any internal vibrations within the molecule. So this is why we started first with a spherically symmetric molecule, SF6. And so how do we excite the rotations and vibrations? Again, we hit a molecule with a short pulse, and in addition to aligning the molecule in the field, a short pulse of light also essentially plucks the molecule. So it's just like plucking a system of coupled oscillators. With a short light pulse, one can excite all the optically excitable or Raman-active vibrations in the molecule. And Keith Nelson was the first person to show this for molecules on a solid. When you hit a solid with a short pulse, one can excite coherent phonons. And we learned how to do this in room temperature gas phase molecules. Tom Weinacht and Randy Bartels did these experiments, where we were trying to understand how to use shaped light pulses to selectively excite particular vibrations in a molecule. For this particular experiment, we weren't trying to do any selective excitation. We just wanted to hit the molecule with the hammer and then let it ring and see if the X-ray generation was sensitive to that ringing. And so the first experiment is illustrated here. So we start with SF6 in a supersonic gas jet, and that's so that the molecule is very cold and so there isn't vibrations already present, so then we can coherently excite them and look at X-rays from a vibrational wave packet. And then we hit the molecule with a short pulse of light, and then it starts to ring or vibrate. And then at a different time delays after that initial pulse, we then excite harmonic generation, plucking the electron from the molecule and slamming it back in, and seeing if we could see the very small shape changes in the molecule by monitoring the X-ray signal. And so this is going to be published this week in PNAS, and it turns out that every single harmonic we looked at exhibits this modulation in the X-ray emission due to the vibrational wave packet. And so you can see either in this 2D plot that shows all of the harmonic orders as a function of time, or in this line out, that you first get a bright burst of X-rays, and that's just because when the pump and probe are overlapped, there's simply more laser signal there to generate the X-rays. But then after the pump that excited the vibrational wave packet is passed, then the X-ray signal still oscillates, and it turns out that the period of oscillations is on the correct few tens of femtoseconds that is characteristic of the expected vibrations in this molecule. And to see what vibrations are present, we make a Fourier transform of that modulation, and three peaks come out very clearly, and this is in the 47th harmonic, one at around 16 terahertz, 19.5 terahertz, and 23 terahertz. And so the question is, are these known vibrations in the molecule? And we can just look up Hertzberg and look for this particular molecule. There's six expected normal modes, and three of them one is forbidden, two are infrared active, and three are Raman active. All that means from our point of view is that we will not expect to excite either the forbidden mode or the infrared active mode. So the only modes we expect to see are the three that were excited by plucking the molecule with the short pulse to begin with. And those are here, and they're exactly the three modes we do see in the X-ray signal. The interesting thing, because we had done this experiment before with visible light, we were very surprised that we actually saw all three modes. And the reason for that was we had pretty much done the same experiment about 3 years before, where again we had hit a molecule, the same molecule, with a short pulse of light to initiate vibrations. And then instead of using coherent electrons during the harmonic generation process to try and see the vibrations, instead we used a long second harmonic light at 400 nanometers to probe those vibrations. And so what do you see? So it turns out, in that case, you only see the breathing mode of SF6. And it was 100 times stronger than other modes, and that's data shown here. And both our group and Georg Korn's group in Max Born had looked at this molecule, and with visible light scattering, if you do it with a fast light pulse, you really can only see the breathing mode. You don't see the other modes in the molecule. And in fact, even to see that simple breathing mode, we had to backfill our entire chamber with gas. So in other words, the conventional ultrafast Raman is 1,000 times less sensitive than the recolliding electron, because we had no problem seeing all three modes in the X-ray signal. But even to see this symmetric breathing, very strong mode, we had to put in fill the entire chamber with gas. And so what this tells us immediately is that harmonic emission is more sensitive to more vibrational modes in molecules. So it's a very interesting spectroscopic tool. And recently we've been able to also see vibrations in this non-spherically symmetric molecule. It's CCLF3. And you can even, in this 2D plot, you can see after we initiate the vibrations, you can see modulations in the harmonic signal. If I show you the line out, it's more clear. And in fact, the amplitude of these oscillations are larger in this case than in SF6. So what modes might we expect to see? So again, this is the molecule and schematics of the various the six normal modes. And you can see that for this crowd, I think we're most of us are time domain people here, so instead of wave numbers, I'll talk about the periods of the vibration. So Henry's giving the same talk at ultrafast, and definitely wave numbers would be the thing to use there for the chemist. But anyway, there's vibrational periods of between 95 femtoseconds and 27 femtoseconds for the six normal modes of this particular molecule. Now, it turns out for these very high, and if you look at the spontaneous Raman spectrum, this is what the modes look like. These are the high frequency modes with periods of 30 and 27 femtoseconds, and these are the lower frequency modes. Now, we don't expect to excite the two high frequency mode. Turns out our laser pulse is on order of these periods, and in that case, the plucking action of launching that vibrational wave packet is not so strong, and so we don't expect to see them. We might expect to see these other modes, and in fact, if we average over all time, we see two of the modes, and I'll talk about dynamic data later where we can see one of these other modes. And in fact, this is an animation Chris made of two of the particular modes we're seeing, just to give you an idea of the motion that we're, so this particular mode is this 470 inverse centimeter mode. So, of course, the question, so that's the data, and the question is, why is this harmonic generation process much more sensitive than conventional vibrational spectroscopy to the very small shape changes in a molecule? We're really only exciting one quantum of vibration, so it's extremely sensitive. So the idea is shown here that it turns out that we're using the same pump pulse in the case of the visible spectroscopy and the X-ray spectroscopy. So the excitation conditions are exactly the same. But it turns out that in the high harmonic generation process, you pluck an electron from the molecule, accelerate it a long ways away. The schematic is not so accurate as those experts will know. And then it recollides with the atom. And it turns out the wavelength of that recolliding electron is about 1.5 angstrom. So it's pretty much matched to the molecular dimensions. And so that means that it's extremely sensitive to very small shape changes in the molecule. The X-ray wavelength, on the other hand, is relatively long. It's a 70 eV photon. It has a 200 angstrom wavelength. So it's all the electron wave function. Just wanted to put up a more correct picture. Of course, we're not pulling an electron at one part of the molecule and recolliding it. We're actually making a wave function, a molecular wave function, and that's very different for the case of an atom. And this just shows a 2D calculation of the ionization and recombination process in the case of an atom, with pictures taken at different times during the laser pulse. And of course, the atom starts out in the ground state, and then ionization starts to happen, and as the electron wave function is accelerated back and forth by the core, one develops very rapid changes in the dipole moment, in the wave function and dipole moment, both in space and time. And this is the origin of the harmonic emission. The equivalent picture in the case of a molecule is shown here. This shows a 2D plane wave recollision with an SF4 molecule, just showing how the recolliding wave function is changing with time. And a very small changes in the shape of the molecule change the shape of this wave function, and again change the dipole moment and then the X-ray yield. And that's the origin of the sensitivity. So Ivan and Chris both put those words into real calculations. And so what Ivan did was did a fully quantum calculation of a very simple linear triatomic molecule. The nice thing about this linear molecule is that, first of all, he can do a fully quantum calculation, and also there's two vibrational modes. There's the symmetric vibrational mode and then the antisymmetric mode. And it turns out one of those modes would be Raman active and one would not. And Ivan was able to show that you expect the X-ray signal to be modulated by either mode. And that's pretty exciting, because it means that vibrational spectroscopy, that using X-ray generation as a probe of vibrational spectroscopy, makes you sensitive to every vibrational mode in the molecule. and it is not at all limited by the same selection rules that either infrared spectroscopy or visible spectroscopy are. And also we were able to show that given our signal to noise, that we should be sensitive to about, even under our current conditions, which are not particularly optimum, that we should be able, we should be sensitive to about a 2 milliangstrom change in position of the atoms in a molecule. Chris was able to take these calculations to a much more sophisticated level. So, and Zach Walters is here at this conference and has a poster tomorrow, I believe. And so what Chris and Zach and Stefano were able to do was to, first of all, exactly model the Raman excitation, creating the vibrational wave packet, and then calculate tunnel ionization from that vibrational wave packet. And of course, the second strong pulse, so you first hit the molecule with your short pulse to start it vibrating, and then you hit it with an even stronger pulse to try and pluck an electron from the molecule and then smash it back in. Of course, that second strong pulse can also generate vibrations, and so they've accurately included that process here. And then they can look at either the long trajectory or the short trajectory, and then have it recombine either into the vibration, the excited vibrational state, or into the ground state. And of course, this is a very that is about as much as I'm going to say because Zaka has the poster. But you can see it's a very rich process with many quantum interferences that will be have a great prospect for control and playing with later. And just to yes, excuse me. The coordinate change in polarizability with coordinate. So everything depends on how your things change, either your ionization or your electron recombination changes as the molecule changes shape by a small amount. All right. So Q is the generalized coordinate here. So I encourage you to see Zach's poster for more details, but what I wanted to show that the theory and experiment are, this comparison isn't our best comparison at all, but it shows that both theory and experiment agree that we should be able to see all the vibrational modes very well, and so that's pretty exciting. it also shows that it's actually, this process is actually even more rich than conventional Raman, because if you drew this as in the photon diagram of a Raman process where they're a high order Raman process, well, this is only one of the, these are only one of the steps in Chris's model. So because of course both the ionization and the recombination can interact with the vibrational modes, and so it's if you want to use this technique, it turns out that if you plot the visibility of these modes, of the three vibrational modes in SF6, as a function of harmonic order, you can see that for the higher harmonics, you can see the vibrational modes much better. And that makes a lot of sense because the wavelength of the returning electron is going to be much shorter for the higher harmonic orders, and so it will be a much better matched and much more sensitive to very small shape changes in the molecule. We can also look at vibrational dynamics, and this just shows that if you look early in time, you can see that the asymmetric vibrations are stronger than the symmetric vibrations, but later in time, these two vibrations decay, we believe, due to reorientation of the molecule, although this has to be modeled more accurately. And we also see the same kinds of dynamics in CCLF3, although here, because it's very new data just from last week, we still need to work on interpretation of why we see such fast vibrational dynamic decay. And so in the last few minutes, if I have time, okay. Thanks, Tony. I wasn't paying attention. I'd just like to talk about this photo emission from surfaces in the presence of an intense field. And Ferenc already talked about this extensively in his talk, the idea that when you have a short X-ray pulse interact with an atomic gas, that of course one gets photo emission and one can observe the photoelectrons. And in the presence of an intense field, if the laser pulse is relatively long, one gets not streaking but sidebands in the presence of the field of this laser field. And of course, this was the basis for the first EUV cross correlation experiments. And so we wanted to apply this technique to a surface. And of course, the first question is, you know, how do you know if you're seeing photo emission in the presence of a laser field from laser-assisted photo emission from a surface? Because in the case of an atomic system, one has very discrete energy levels, so it's very easy to see when there's simultaneous absorption or emission of an infrared photon. But most solids have a continuous photoelectron spectrum, so it's a little bit more difficult to convince people you've actually seen them, in particular with many other competing processes, such hot electron dynamics, excitons, all kinds of other things. But the nice thing about platinum 111 is that it has a very nice peak at near the Fermi edge, and so it's ideal for showing that you're actually seeing this process. It's not at all necessary to observe this process. And so what's shown here is the photoelectron spectrum that we see from platinum in the presence of an intense infrared pump field as a function of time delay between the 50 EV EUV photon and the infrared field. And what you can see here, this is the photo emission spectrum of platinum that you would get at a synchrotron source, for example. Very characteristic peaks in the photo emission spectrum. But as the pump and probe are overlapped, you can see that the entire photo emission spectrum from platinum completely disappears. You get modulations over a huge part of the photo emission spectrum. And this is just a blow up of the same thing, showing the unperturbed and then the dressed photo emission spectrum. Now, contrary to what at least two other publications have reported in the literature, this is not due to hot electrons. Remember that if you heat a metal, you expect to get some smearing at the Fermi edge. But remember, all of the levels down here, it's a filled band. There's just no way you can push a lot of electrons around down here. And it turns out also we can see hot electrons, and this laser-assisted photo emission can happen at intensities lower than those needed to generate hot electrons. And also, you don't see these effects at all when the polarization is perpendicular to when the infrared polarization is perpendicular to the X-ray polarization. So we know very well that this is the laser-assisted photo emission. And so we can model it using the same continuum state dressing as is done in the atomic case. So if we assume that the sidebands are generated based by the laser photon, we can actually make a fit. And so what's shown here is the data is shown in blue, and in red is a fit to the unperturbed photo emission spectra, assuming a response function that's consisted with the dressing of the continuum state. The interesting thing here is that in the case of the atomic laser-assisted photo emission, the initial state is is in an atom, and so there's no initial state. You don't expect any initial state dynamics. However, in a solid, it's a two-step process, and so you do expect to be able to see some initial state dynamics, or you might expect, depending on what experiment you do. But under the experimental conditions we looked at, we were able to explain the entire dressing of the photo emission spectrum by just dressing of the final continuum state. And this is just showing we can make a cross-correlation of our... this cross-correlation between the laser and the X-ray pulse measured the pulse duration of the laser that we used. It was not particularly short for this experiment. But in principle, sub-femtosecond time resolution is feasible. As Ferrin said, opening up measurements of convex attosecond electron dynamics on solids in adsorbates and such. And moreover, this will be a very useful method to characterize attosecond pulses at higher energies, because it turns out in the current techniques that use gas phase molecules, the absorption cross-sections drop very rapidly as a function of energy, but the nice thing about a surface is that you have many atoms concentrated on a surface, and so the signals should be higher. And so with that, I'd like to conclude, and I hope I've convinced you that high harmonic generation is a very useful high-order probe of intermolecular dynamics. It's sensitive to all vibrational modes. If as a chemical spectroscopy, a simple Fourier transform is all that's needed to actually see what modes are present when. Of course, there's much more information in the data. We hope to be able to extract structural information by looking at how the vibrations change as a function of harmonic order, looking at different trajectories, looking at very fast vibrations where the different trajectories will have different recollision times. There's just so many ways that this work can go. It's also 1,000 times more sensitive than conventional impulsive Raman spectroscopy. Changes to very small sensitive to very small changes in the bond, and a very interesting probe because it allows one to look at molecular dynamics on the ground state potential surface. There's all kinds of ways we're hoping to take this work, looking at dissociation, conformational changes, intersystem crossings, and looking at electron wave function dynamics in molecules. And so with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention and acknowledge funding for this work.
Very nice work.
Hi, friends.
I just wanted to point out that I don't think there is any contradiction between what you said.
No. Absolutely no contradiction.
I was just
trying to liven things up a bit.
I think it is really very, very important to draw here the correct conclusion. So actually, if you use a pulse curve, as you did, basically an episecond pulse curve,
you see the sidebands. Yep.
The advantage of this is that now if you excite an electron just for the sake of argument out of an isolated state, broad distribution, then in the continuum you even if your individual attosecond pulses are very short in the train, you will have dips in your photoelectron spectrum, basically because the spectrum is structured.
Yes.
So you have space which you can fill up with signal. These are your sidebands.
Yes.
And you can produce these sidebands at a very moderate laser intensity, which is much, much lower than the laser intensity we need
to streak.
To substantially streak the photoelectron spectrum from an isolated one.
But there might be ways of extracting attosecond dynamics just in the case with the pulse train, so you could do it either way.
Absolutely.
I was referring more to the fact I wanted to encourage people, because I think there's a lot of good, excellent theoretical questions and to be addressed in attosecond dynamics in materials and on surfaces. And I was just going, I just didn't want people to think that these are hard experiments, but no harder than any other experiment that we're all doing. So I was trying to address the fact that you said that you've got to look for a very narrow intensity range to do these experiments on the surfaces. It was more of an encouragement. I totally agree that.
I think the important message is that in case you have to do with processes which with a high probability terminate before the next attosecond pulse comes up in your train, I think it is advantageous to use a train, because you can get along with a much lower probing laser intensity, just as you pointed out.
Yes.
The trouble is, as soon as your process doesn't do you this favor, that it terminates within two subsequent pulses in your attosecond pulse, then probably the evaluation will become very, very complicated.
Okay. I see. Okay.
When you measure it, you use
So I showed some 2D plots that showed, so we look at each harmonic order separately using a CCD camera and spectrometer. So we have the amplitude and phase data of all the harmonic orders. However, at this point, the theories are just becoming able to generate that same data. So we do not know as yet if we can use that data to extract some structural information. We'd like to. Oh, absolutely. And in fact, we were trying to avoid that in the first experiment, as if, because we see reorientational relaxation. And so hopefully in subsequent experiments, we can take data with multiple polarizations and use that then to extract the orient, to possibly extract orientation and shape as a function of time. But you would see a very big difference, particularly in the non-spherically symmetric molecule, when there is a rotational wave packet excited. Andre.
You might high order Hamiltonian generation equal
to
the time itself. You must make sure that you're colliding electron in the trajectory of equalizing zero field.
And that's easy, you know that. So of course these are very new experiments. So I mean, I would say that in the atomic case, it is very easy to see the two different trajectory and to select gas jet position and which one we look at. Right now, in fact, we were looking at the short trajectories, and right now. They didn't look, but we can calculate both, and I think that's another avenue that one can use to check the models and the experiments. So that is something we definitely have planned to do. Is that Shivari? Yep. So okay, that's a good question. In fact, the reviewers were very confused about all of this. So you know, because we're all used to thinking about it in an atom. I didn't. I wasn't saying that. So okay, so with photo emission, you know, it's very surface sensitive. So the electrons just emerge. In fact, in this case, it's 50 eV EUV photon, so they're coming from the top 5 angstroms. So the thing that the reviewers got all confused about is, okay, so you've got this electron emerging from the last, from the surface layer. So the question is, if you know, do the electrons that undergo collisions, do you also dress those? That was what they, and of course in principle you can, but of course if an electron undergoes collisions on the way out before you see it, then very often its direction is going to change and you just don't measure it. And so, you know, the assumption in the big industry in synchrotron, photo emission spectroscopy from synchrotrons is that most of the electrons you see come from that electron mean free path escape depth, and that they are accurately, you know, mapping out the band structure in the material. And from the experiments we've done so far, we don't see any initial state broadening, and so we're assuming that our experiments are done under those regimes. But of course, to a condensed matter physicist, you know, when they think about looking at a photo emission spectrum, they can't imagine that if you're going to irradiate the thing with a light pulse strong enough to put sidebands, that you won't mess with the initial state. And of course, this is a question we don't have to worry about at all in atoms, but will be very interesting to look at theory. And of course, that would be the things we'll be trying to measure, all right? And so. We just have one. We can move our sample, but this one was done near 45 degrees. And it was. It's time of flight, correct. It's the time of flight, correct. Gaita. Oh, Richard Haidt. Oh, okay. Hi. Oh, yeah. So Richard did a pump probe experiment where he was looking at, in one of his experiments, for example, he was looking at relaxation. So he was not at all using this technique. He was using photo emission, but what he did was to create hot hot electrons, yes. He wasn't looking at dressing. He used harmonics as a probe. Yeah. So in other words, yeah, he irradiated the sample, created carriers, and one of the experiments they looked at recombination of the carriers with surface states, and then probed that using photoemission. So what Ferenc and I were talking about is dressing the photoelectron spectrum, so you might be able to access at a second very fast dynamics in materials. So Rich did a pump probe experiment, pumped with red light, made hot carriers, and probed with X-ray light, and just looked at the photoemission spectrum changes in the photo. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.